And we are at a time that seems to run faster and faster and faster. You know, every year I look at my wife and I go, do you realize the year just started and it's over? And we've been married another so many years. We'll be quiet about that. But it's been a long time. But I look at my wife and I tell her, you know, it seems like yesterday that we just got married. Things just seem wonderful. And we've been very, very blessed over the years. And so time just seems to run really, really fast. Events that take place in this world affect us more and more and more every day. Every single day, if you're looking out there, you'll see what really is taking place. Look what happened to the United States of America back on 9/11. I don't know how many can really remember the details, but what happened to our economy and everything that took place, and it really affected us. What do you think would happen if several major terrorist attacks were successful here in the United States, either in the same day or the same week? Maybe they got to the Wall Street, maybe they got to some other major cities. What do you think would happen to this country if we had to face something like that all at once? Look how fragile our economy is today versus what it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago, and how other countries affect our economy here in the United States. You know, just in China, it's been devaluing its money. And look at the effect that it had on oil, and oil going down, and the effect it had on the economy. And our stock market decided to take a little hike for a while, but then it's coming back. But, I mean, there's so many little triggers that are out there today that we didn't have 10 or 15 years ago, but today we do. We are told as a group to watch world events so that we may be a collective voice in the wilderness. And the wilderness for us is here on this earth because we're not supposed to be part of it. So it's part of that wilderness. It warned people to change their ways and follow the system that God had set up on earth. Can you imagine what this earth would have been like if Adam and Eve just would have followed God's laws? Could it be that this entire world would have been a Garden of Eden? And no matter where you go and what you saw would be just unbelievable. I can remember back in 1972 and the... Now my age is going to give away here because my brain's going short. The Church Magazine. Plain Truth. There was a parrot. Anybody remember that? A parrot on front of the magazine. That was one of the first ones that I read. And I got reading that, and I got, you've got to be kidding. I never gave any thought about all the things that were in that article. And it started my brain just thinking about other things that I really didn't pay much attention to. But we need to be able to set something up on this earth. In Matthew 24, Christ tells us what to look for in world events. Let's turn over there to Matthew 24 in verse 5. Matthew 24 in verse 5. It says, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Many will come teaching that they know Christ, teaching that they're following Christ, and some even say that they are Christ. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So we're going to experience all this stuff to some degree or another, and maybe someday we'll actually be in one of those wars, not fighting, but trying to survive. It could happen. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. Things that we need to pay attention and to look for. Some countries or nations that have problems today, if you're paying attention to, is Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Iraq, Libya, Argentina, Israel, North Korea, the United States, Russia, and the list can go on. And you can see different trials and turmoils and wars and rumors of wars that are taking place in these countries. Did you know that there are earthquakes in many places in the world? How many earthquakes do you think happen a year in this world? Anybody want to hazard a guess? 100? 1,000? No guesses. All right. 500,000 has been recorded that happen every year in this world. Can you imagine that? 100,000 of these can be felt to some degree or another. Now, it might be just a little tiny tremor, than we know. Then there's some big major ones that get up to the 7, 8, and 9 levels, and they create havoc, serious havoc. Famines or severe rain droughts are in numerous countries. There was an article in the USA Today paper that I read not long ago when I was sitting in my hotel room on Tuesday, July 28, 2015. It was reported that California's historic drought appears to be matched by severe dry spells on three other continents: Brazil, North Korea, and South Korea. The much lower than average precipitation is wreaking havoc on millions of people, lives, and livelihoods. But just think about if this all comes, all the people that make money and survive just on livestock and growing crops and selling and transporting and all that stuff, all gone. And now these people don't have any jobs, and it's all over the world. They create all kinds of havoc. Diseases such as AIDS, West Nile, STDs, and hepatitis are some of the illnesses facing the world today. And there's many, many more, obviously, like cancer and the different things that are floating around that people have to face. Brethren, we are living in some very serious times. This is a very serious time for this world. Society itself is fast becoming a society that anything goes. If you look out there today, most people don't care about God. They don't care about God's way. They care about climbing the ladder. They care about doing it their way. They care about nothing other than themselves. And this recent thing that happened to this prep school, I don't know if people have paid attention to it, where one of the seniors got involved with one of the, I guess it was a freshman, and it was a ritual that the seniors did. Anything goes, and they're trying to get away with it. Now this poor young man is going to find out that in reality he could have some very serious jail time because of what he did. And he's not alone, and that's the sad part. I think I mentioned before once that there was a survey taken when we lived in Washington, D.C., to one of the schools about how many of the kids that were in there had their original parents still together. And my son was the only one that raised his hand of his entire class. How sad is that? That's really sad. Another survey shows that in high school graduating classes, how many young ladies were still virgins? You know, half the class was, half the class wasn't. And they asked the men, well, 25% of the men weren't, 75 were. What's that tell you? There's multiple partners running around in high school, you know, having issues and all kinds of things that can happen after that. So society in itself is fast becoming society that anything goes. Guns are so prevalent today, it's unbelievable. There was a state trooper, I think, in Texas or someplace who was filling his car up with gas, and a guy came up behind him and shot him. And then when he hit the ground, he shot him 3 or 4 more times. No explanation, just killed him right there. So things are going on in this world. Christ told us what it would be like before his coming to include what people would be doing. Let's go back to Matthew 24 and verse 36. It says, "But that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man." It's a very key scripture. As the time of Noah, as the days of Noah. Well, what was it like for Noah? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 6. I'll get there. Genesis chapter 6, beginning in verse 5. "Then the Lord saw that wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent and the thoughts of his heart was only on evil continually." What do you think's going on today? What do you think's going on today with people's thinking? "And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. And so the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in generations. Noah walked with God, and Noah begot 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. and the earth was corrupt beyond before God, and the earth was filled with violence. Is our earth filled with violence today? Is it corrupt today? No, that's not everybody yet. But think about the time of Noah. Let's go to chapter 7 and verse 1. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Come into the ark, and you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation." He was the only family on the earth. Now, in my thinking, I'd like to think that that's the church. That we would be those that God would want to save. Because the time's coming. A very difficult time for people on this earth. And I sure don't want to go through all that stuff that's coming, and I'm sure you don't either. But we probably will face some of it, whether we like it or not. Let's turn to Matthew 24 again. Matthew 24, in verse 38. It says, "For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark." The way our society is going, the way that our laws are changing, it's going to be an anything-goes legally society. The way they now that man can be with man and woman with woman. And there's a lot of other laws that have changed things too that we aren't aware of, that you and I might not ever face, that make it a lot easier for things to happen. Look at our political environment and the amount of corruption that lies within it. And these are the people that are leading us and where they're headed. Very difficult time. The time is soon coming when we will need a certain characteristic, and this is the message of the sermon. The first was a foundation. The time is soon coming when we will need a certain characteristic, and we will need a whole boatload of it. Each and every single person that is following God is going to have this characteristic. Nobody is going to have it for you, and you're going to need it. We will all need godly courage, not the kind that comes and goes, but the kind that never fails. Godly courage. Something that will allow you to stand up and face whatever is before you and be able to handle it, even if it's unto death or a place of safety. It'll be that courage that will allow you never to turn your back on God the Father. The courage that each and every one of us need. As a little child, and there's one in this room that I can sympathize with, I was skinnier than a rail. And I was just talking to this young man. He eats like a horse, I guess, but he's skinnier than a rail. If you stood a pencil up, I could probably have hid behind it. That's how thin I was. Really skinny. But I also ate a lot. But I could hide behind it, and no one would know that I was even there. I also thought that one who stood up and fought in a fight was the one who had the courage. And I can remember going through school, grade school, and there were skirmishes, and I was involved in a couple of them, obviously. I didn't skate that, didn't know about the church or God or anything like that. And I was involved in some of those, and when I stood up against this bully this one time, all of a sudden, I got left alone from being picked on because I was so skinny and looked like an easy target. But I stood up, and things changed. If we look at courage in this sense, we define it as bravery, meaning danger without fear. This kind of courage applies in the case of war. This is the kind of courage soldiers are supposed to have for battle. But there's a great deal that don't, but they are supposed to have it. There's another kind of courage which goes deeper into your very being, the kind of courage that allows you to walk away from the fight. What happens when you walk away from a fight? You get teased. You know, you won't stand up against what you believe. You get teased. A lot of people got teased over the fact they wouldn't pick up or they got picked on more. You walk away from the fight. It takes a lot of courage to walk away from that fight. You might get mocked. You might get called a chicken. You know, more than one person will start picking on you. Pretty soon you've got four or five students in your classroom picking on you, and you have to face this all year long, every day you come to school. You have to face it, and nobody's there to help you. But who had more courage? The one that walked away, or the one that stood up and either got severely beaten or was lucky enough to survive and win the fight? Who has more courage? Courage applies to moral strength that makes a person face any danger, trouble, or pain steadily and without showing fear. There's several in the church that are fighting pain all the time. And how many of us know it? They're able to hide it. They do very well. And they show a lot of courage because they're not giving up their life. They want to survive. If someone were to ask you, do you have courage or are you courageous, how would you answer the question? It's an interesting question. Your answer ought to be yes, but not in a sense of physical fighting. If you are deeply converted, stand up for what you believe, and then you have courage. When in the workforce, I'm sure that all of us have faced this from time to time, people say, you're different. I had one neighbor a while ago, when we lived in Bay Village many, many years ago. He goes, I don't like you. And I'm going, why? I mean, I helped him out in his house and doing some woodwork for him and some other stuff. And he goes, I don't like you. He says, I said, why? He says, but you don't curse. You know, about every fourth word. He was an FBI agent, by the way. But every fourth word out of his mouth was something that I didn't want to repeat. You know, nice guy, good values, raising a family, but he didn't like me because I was different. And I'm sure you all face the same thing. If you're following God's way, you have to stand out, either in the way you speak or the way you act or your value structure. You know, I used to work for Mobil Oil Corporation for 14 years, and I went up to their management chain. I ended up at their headquarters, and I decided, after I was told by a good friend that you do great work. Everybody likes the work you do, but nobody wants you on their team. I didn't go with them on Friday nights. I didn't party with them on the weekends. And when we went on trips, I didn't run around with them because it was all bad news. And you would be amazed at the number of married men. And I'm telling you right from experience, the number of married men that are out chasing in the bars and looking around when they're not at home. I was absolutely dumbfounded. And after I was told that, I decided, you know, that's a message. God's telling me I need to change jobs. And so I started looking. But that's what I faced, and I'm sure that others have faced similar things. We know faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. To be deeply converted, you must be different. You can't be the same. You know, you belong on a golf course, and I've played golf with a couple of folks in here, and we have fun. If we hit a bad shot, we laugh at it, or we make jokes about it. We just go hit it again, and maybe that's a good shot, and maybe it's another bad shot. I've been on golf courses when people have thrown clubs, cursed, been indignant. I mean, just terrible to have to face things like that, but it's there. But we're different. You must pull yourself out of the ways of this world. You have to be like the child who walks away from the fight and be willing to be harassed for doing so by others who don't understand. It can even happen on your own street. You know, I can tell a story of my daughter, Melissa. I think it was Melissa. It was one of my daughters. We had a neighbor down the street. They had a young girl, and it might have been Annette. I'm not sure. And they were big on celebrating Christmas and everything, and, well, they set them straight. Santa Claus wasn't real. And they got upset over it, you know, because they wanted to celebrate this lie that they were teaching their children. And it was a lie. Courage is the opposite of fear. It is acting against fear. Franklin Roosevelt said, and I quote, all we have to fear is fear itself. And that's it. A truly courageous person does what God wants him to do regardless of the consequences. He is willing to take the necessary step to go in the right direction. No matter what you're faced with, you know, somebody might say to you, well, if you don't work, it's a holy day. If you don't work tomorrow, don't bother to come back. What are you going to do? And I've known in the past, some people have made the decision to go to work. And I've seen some of the results after that, too. And sometimes they lose their job anyhow. It was just somebody putting them in a position to see what they would do. They compromise their value structure, and then the guy says, I got you. You know, I need you to stay now on Friday night. I need you to work on Saturday. Your value structure doesn't hold anymore because you gave it up. And it changed. That's something that we can't afford to do. In all aspects of our life, we need more courage, whether it is on a national level, individuals, as families, or as a church. We as a church need to have godly courage. We know that God did not choose the mighty of this world, but rather He chose the foolish and the meek. And here we are, the foolish and the meek. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. In verse 27, it says, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. There will be a day when things will turn upside down, and we will no longer be thought of as foolish. We will be thought of as people that knew what was going on and paid attention. Notice, nowhere does it say in that scripture that He called cowards. I didn't read that in there. We're not to be cowards. We're to be strong. We're to have good, godly courage. People in the society, as we know it today, often mistake humble and meek people as weak. And I've seen that over the years. I've been around a year or two, as a lot of you folks have been around a year or two, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. This simply is not true. Just because we understand that we fall into the category of foolish and weak does not mean that we do not have courage, that we do not have godly courage, nor does it mean that we have to live our lives in fear. We just don't. Our neighbors, we've lived in many places. We've never had any neighbors that haven't liked us. Some have questioned our values because we kept the Sabbath. We don't do things on the Sabbath. We participated in church, and we have for years and years and years. And they just never came to understand what it would be like. Just because we understand that we fall into that category doesn't mean that we have to live in fear. Let's turn to 2 Timothy. Second Timothy, in verse 1, chapter 1, beginning in verse 6. Therefore I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Whatever we have to face in this life, you know, we have serious things to face. I can remember the surgeries that I went through. Scary. My big problem in thinking about it was, well, if the guy goes oops when he's around my nerves in my neck, the rest of my body's not going to work for the rest of my life, however long that's going to be. And so my first time, I fought it for 9 months. I didn't want to go, but I kept having major problems. And one day the doctor looked at me, the surgeon, and he says, here, put your hand like this. Now, hold your arm in. No, hold your arm in. No, I want you to hold your arm in. I couldn't do it. He says, your nerves are dying. He says, when they die, your arm is kaput for the rest of your life. Gone. So I was convinced I needed to go have the surgery. And I did. But when I walked in to have the surgery, I was as calm as if I was going to a dinner. I was not excited. I wasn't upset. I just was very calm. Walked in, did the surgery, woke up 2 hours later and was out of bed walking around. It was absolutely amazing. And I knew God was with me that whole trip. There was no doubt in my mind, as it was in the other two trips I had to make. So it was an interesting time. But we know when we have that kind of courage, when we have that power, when we have that sound mind, we know that God is with us. God gave us a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. We all need to continue to rely on that power and that sound mind. Let's turn over to Galatians just for a minute. And chapter 5. And there are the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Things that if sometimes you feel that maybe you're not growing, it can give you a scale to measure yourself against. If you seriously look at where you were a year ago with these and where you are today, you'll know whether or not you're growing. Galatians 5 and verse 22, it says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy." And we've talked about joy over many different things. We talk about joy and adversity and our trials that we have to go through. And they're not much fun when you're going through them. And I think we all know that. But there is joy that comes to the end of it, because I think as we've all gone through those trials, we've grown immensely. Because you look back and you say, why am I going through this? What's happening? And in a lot of cases, you'll find that your faith has increased significantly over that period of time because you've gone through it. Peace, long-suffering, kindness, godliness, faithfulness, gentleness. You know, you don't just fire off and get excited because somebody decided to cut you off while you're going down the road. Self-control, against such there is no law. All of these fruits of the Spirit, I mean, they're very basic things that we need to pay attention to and to watch. Do you realize that there's a common thread through all of those? Every last one of them? And that thread is courage. Godly courage. How much courage does it take to truly love one who hates you? Now, we've all had people that have created much grief in our lives. How much courage does it take? One who despises your beliefs and your value structure. Kind of sticks you out there and makes fun of you and talks behind your back, even at work, and just does things that just irritate you. How much courage does it take to truly show love toward that person? How much courage does it take to truly express joy in times of sorrow? Could be the death of a loved one. Could be anything. How much courage does it take to truly have peace of mind in the midst of turmoil, such as illnesses? We've been going through our trial with our daughter for over 3 years now. And as human beings, you know, I like to try and think of logically. I don't see an end in sight. As one of God's children, I know God could heal her tomorrow. He could heal her this afternoon. He could make it go away. I've actually witnessed healings instantly in my lifetime. Not for me, but other people. I've actually been present when that's taken place. How much courage does it take to truly show goodness toward all mankind? You know, he talked about, I think it was Mr. Tanner that gave a sermon at once and talked about, it's really a big, somebody was homeless and he didn't reach out and help, and then he felt how bad he was. But how much does it take to think about some homeless person and helping them along? I'm not saying this just to stand up here and say that, you know, I do this. That's not the point. The point is, look at the other person's view. I was with my granddaughter one day, and we drove up a ramp, and there was this woman standing on the ramp of a major intersection. Sign, homeless, need help. And I gave her a little money. You thought I would have given her the world. She came up to the window, and she started tearing up and just thanking me over and over and over again. It was just a little thing that happened. And it kind of makes you feel better, you know. We have the same thing within our own body, that people need help. There are people that have reached out to help me, even here in this area down here in Cincinnati. You know, unsolicited, volunteered. It was a great thing they did. But I'm sure that they were rewarded from the benefit inside, because I know how I felt. How much courage does it take to truly show self-control no matter what the circumstances? You know, how long can you take it when somebody's picking on you? How long can you take it when some guy cuts you off in driving, or some guy comes ripping by at 100 miles an hour in a 35-mile-an-hour zone? You know, it could really hurt a lot of people. It takes a lot of courage. A true Christian is a soldier of God, and all good soldiers have much courage. We are called to change our habits, our ways of thinking, and our life. And I'm sure if you were raised in the church, it might be a little different. If you came from outside the church, you got a whole boatload of changing to do. I mean, you're learning the ways of society. I came from the military, and the military is great for teaching you the improper way to use the English language, I guess would be a nice way to say it, and how to drink and smoke. So it's those things that you learn when you're in the military. And then coming out of the military and you're finding out, oh, now I'm interested in this church and the changes that have to be made. My changes did not come easy. They were very difficult. I was a workaholic. It was hard for me to even slow down on the Sabbath. I'd be in the house and I'd leave the house. I'd go take a walk. I'd come back. I'd get back in the house, pick up a book, set it down, go take a walk. I mean, I just couldn't settle down. It took me a long time to finally learn that, hey, if you start reading the Bible and you start paying attention to it, you know, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Jesus came with a message for all of us, and it was a message that contained courage and faith. Let's turn over to Mark. Mark chapter 1, in verse 15, and breaking into the thought, it says, "The time is fulfilled, and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel." That takes courage. One, to repent, to admit that you've done something wrong, takes courage. If you truly can find it, it takes courage. And in order for us to repent, we must have the courage to take the step necessary for this to happen, and we must have faith that the things that Christ was teaching would be so. We have to have the faith that everything that the Bible is teaching us, that we are the sons of God, that we do have a life after this life, that we're going to be part of training other people to become part of that God family, that we're going to have a special place in His kingdom because we're going to be part of the first fruits. All these things we read, and we have to have the faith and the courage to understand it and accept it. One of the things that Christ taught us was that we must follow His commandments and become more like Him as He followed His Father. I find it interesting that those who have left our organization, or we're in worldwide, and they stayed there, and their viewpoints today, it's unbelievable. I was listening to a story the other day from somebody that I know very well, and they were talking about an individual who got crushed pretty bad by a vehicle. Bones, chest, everything. They got him into the hospital. They thought he was going to die, and he ended up surviving. And he talked about this experience about floating over top of his body, watching them work on him. And I'm sitting here going, no. I don't think that's the case. I mean, you really believe that? That you're going to rise up there and you're going to watch that? Yeah, no, put that bone over there because that's where it goes. You know, and just see what's going to happen. I just don't think that was happening. Christ told us that He came to be served, or that He came not to be served, but to serve. Very crucial thing. We are to be servants. All of us. Let's turn over to Matthew 20. beginning in verse 25. It says, "But Jesus called them to himself and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant, and whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many.'" The ultimate service, to give your life for another human being. Serving does not necessarily come easy. Some people, it just seems to be natural, you know, and they can just get involved and they can just do it, and they just seem to jump in. Other people, it's not so easy. It's hard for them to be able to see a way to help, to be involved, to continue to grow. So it doesn't come easy. Serving requires you to take the first step, not just sit back. I can remember back in worldwide days, we used to have to set up halls for 350, 400 people. And like when you got there, the younger men were all pitching in. Nobody asked, setting up the chairs, just doing everything. We had a pretty sizable crew doing the work, just stepping in. Serving requires you to have courage to try. You know, there's certain things that you can try, and when you're serving it, and you're just not very good at it. I'll give you a personal example. We're in Washington, D.C. We had a congregation. It was probably, at that time, maybe 400 or 500 people. And one of the assistant pastors there didn't like the lead songs. He goes, "Gary, how'd you like the lead songs?" I've never led songs in my life. So I'm sitting here going, "Okay, I'll try it." So I got up there and I led songs. I was never so nervous in my whole life, because you got this in front of you. If you're not on tone, the whole congregation is going to hear you. If you lose your place on the song sheet and you sing the wrong verse, everybody's going to know. I mean, it's just one of these things that if you're really nervous, everything can happen. So I survived it. Well, 3 weeks later, he comes back. He had song leading again. He goes, "Hey, why don't you take my place?" "No." You know, I did that once. I tried it once. And some people just aren't very good at it. And I'm one of those that is not good at song leading. I refuse to do that. But I know there's others that doesn't bother them. They can get up and they can lead songs and they got good voices. And I mean, they do a great job. So there's things that we could learn. Probably if I was forced into it and I was going to be on the list every month for a year, I might finally catch on. But it would take a while. Serving teaches you how to deal with those who might be hard to please. You know, not all of us are easy to please. Some of us are perfections. Some of us, you know, we're just so-so enough. People just don't care as long as it gets done. You know, here it is. Go do it. Go away. Serving teaches you to learn by your mistakes and become a better servant. You know, we all can't be perfect at what we do the first time around. Serving can be a quick one-time event, or it can be over a period of time. You know, there are people that need help at the feast, and you serve once, and it's over. Back in your congregation, you can have the same issue. Maybe there's 3 or 4 people that are either elderly or handicapped or something and need constant help every week, in and out, in and out. And there's never a break. So it can be over a long period of time. Serving takes courage because it takes a commitment. Your commitment or my commitment, once you sign up for the task, to do it and to try and do it better every week. Serving is a responsibility that one is held accountable for once one has committed to perform it. So everybody's looking for you to show up. Obviously, the sermonette person missed that one. He's not here. No, I don't know what happened with that. Someone missed some communication, but whatever. But you get assignments, and so you want. The sound system is something that we count on every week. You know, and so when one person's not here, somebody else is filling in, or somebody else is filling in. Just takes time. Christ was a master servant. He had courage, responsibility to carry out whatever task the Father handed him. Every single time. We as a group can learn to serve each other just by sharing the responsibilities that need to be performed at church. You know, over the years, and I don't know what it's like here because I'm new, so I'm not judging, I'm just making a comment. There's been congregations where it's always been the same few people doing the same job over and over and not giving anybody else a chance. And instead of saying, hey, why don't you help? You know, and then you've got two people. You know, what would happen, for example, if you got suddenly ill and you didn't show up? Somebody else needs to fill in that spot, and they need to know how to do it. We might not all be qualified to perform every service, but we can learn and assist others who do not know how to do it. And a good example of that is the sound system. That's more of a technical thing. When it comes to computers, zero in my book, because I can't do it. But when it comes to electronics and things like that, we have three or four or five people in here that know how to do it. And that makes sense, and it does a lot. When we were baptized, we in essence said we were willing to serve, each and every one of us. We were willing to do whatever God wanted us to do. Christ said to us, before we commit, do what? Count the cost. A lot of people came into the church, and they didn't count the cost. Let's go over to Luke chapter 14. Because there is a cost. There's a lot of benefits. But there is a cost in coming into the church. Chapter 14 and verse 28. For which of you intending to build a tower did not sit down first and count the cost, whether it has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him. When we came into the church said, you've got to change your way of life. You've got to count the cost in making that change, because what you used to do is definitely going to change. And pretty significantly, especially if you were raised outside the church and you came in. If you were raised inside the church, you're probably already well on track. But there's still changes in your own life as you get older that you have to make in order to stay the course. In verse 30, it says, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. For what king is going to make war against another king and does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Count the cost. It's very important to make sure that when you commit, that you know what you're committing to. God chose the weak and the foolish of this world, but he wanted them to have and to demonstrate courage. Each and every one of us is expected to demonstrate our godly courage. Let's turn over to the book of Joshua and look at a few examples. Joshua chapter 1, beginning in verse 1. It says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, and you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life, and as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, or of godly courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, and you may prosper wherever you go. Joshua was a man of God. In all of his life, he followed what Moses had commanded and what God wanted him to do. There's another individual that we should take a minute and look at, and that's David. David had godly courage when things were difficult. he rallied on that courage, and he relied on that courage. Let's turn to 1 Samuel. First Samuel, chapter 17, beginning in verse 32. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fall because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine." And we know what he's talking about. And Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing as he defiled the armies of the living God." And in verse 17, picking it up in verse 45, it says, "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts and God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you to my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel.'" David had good, godly courage. There was no doubt in his mind over what he had to face. David had many faults in his life. He wasn't sin-free. He had a lot to overcome. David was a man after God's own heart, which means we're sinful, but we can still qualify and have God love us and want us. David learned to serve, and here he is serving an entire army by wiping out this Philistine. Let's look at another pillar. It goes back to the beginning of what we started with. Let's take a look at Noah. Here's a man who lived for 600 years before the flood came. 600 years. Can you imagine living your life for 600 years in a world that was totally against God's way? A totally corrupt society? 600 years and not go astray, not fall victim, not be taken in. You know, there used to be and I think it's probably true, if you have four people that like to gamble and drink and smoke and carry on, and one that doesn't, and he's part of this group, over time, his value structure changes and he becomes part of this group. He's not able to pull this group to his direction. It usually goes the other way. And here we have Noah, facing all of this in his life, and yet he was able to resist. Genesis 6, in verse 9, which we read once, but let's go back and read it again, because it really gives a description of what he had to go through. 6 and verse 9, it says, "This is the genealogy of Noah. He was a man perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God, and Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence." He had to live in this society, and he had his family with him, and he had to keep them out of this society, and he probably had a pretty tough time. In order for Noah to live God's way, he had to learn to serve, have courage to stand up for his beliefs, no matter what he had to face. Because I'm sure he had to get supplies from people around him. He had to get wood, trees, pitch, and all the stuff he needed to build the ark. And it took a long time to build that little boat. It was a big boat for that age. Noah guided and directed and served his family. Noah was a man who walked with God and served as he was instructed. He did what God told him to do. Christ instructed us to be of good courage and to serve one another. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, beginning in verse 35. And we've read this scripture over time, many times. It says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me, and I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or feed you, or thirsty, and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger, and take you in, or naked, and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick, or in prison, and come to you? And the king will answer, and he said to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you've done it to one of these, my least brethren, you've done it to me. Serving one another, taking care of each other, is likened to taking care of Christ. Very important. The church is a training ground for things to come, and things are coming. The church is where we learn to properly serve, how we learn to take care of each other. Let's look at one last example of one who had great godly courage, a man who learned to serve the brethren, a man who was in society, didn't serve the brethren, but was out after the brethren, a man who set a great example for us to read and to learn from. Let's look at Paul, for example. Let's turn over to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians in verse 11. Or chapter 11, I'm sorry. Beginning in verse 23. It says, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more in labors, more abundant in stripes, above measure, in prisons, more frequently, in deaths often. You know, how would you like to think about what this guy is going through in his life? How would you like to be in his shoes? How would you like to walk a mile in his shoes? From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 39 stripes, 5 times. That would be one horrible event to have to go through. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day. I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils often, waters in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in the perils of the wilderness, in perils of the sea, and in perils among false brethren. Think about what he went through in his life as he walked through the earth after he was converted. Think about what he did in his life before he was converted. And now he's changed, and now he has to face all the people that he persecuted, that he didn't kill, or have killed. Tremendous life, tremendous change. He truly had a great deal of godly courage. Brethren, look out into this world and see what is coming. You know, it's not going to come today or tomorrow. You know, I don't think. I'd sure like to see it tomorrow. I mean, I think we all would. But you think about the times of Noah. Christ told us that it would be like the times of Noah. We're not there yet if it's going to be like the times of Noah. There's still a large group of people on this earth that believe in something other than robbery and all the other paraphernalia that's gone. They may not know Christ, and they may not follow God's commandments, but they still don't believe in what the value structure is that's being changed. If it's truly going to be in the times of Noah, then there's only going to be a group of people, a small group, I would guess, that are going to be considered safe, be like Noah's family. In that time, in this time, hopefully it'll be the church and all those that are in the church and stay in a church, truly acquire godly college. Courage. But we're not there yet. We've got a ways to go. We've got times coming that it could be very difficult for us. There could be a time coming when they could pass a law that says any person that doesn't work on Saturday can't buy food. I don't know. It's just a thought, whatever it is. There could be a time that it could be very difficult, or there could be a time when if you don't want to work on Saturday, you don't have a job. You know, there are companies now that have advertising out there that you must work Saturday and Sunday. And that obviously eliminates us. So we have to be aware of that. There's a time that is definitely coming. We need to focus on growing on godly courage so that we will be able to withstand the events that are coming, that we will be able to collectively be a family, taking care of each other, not letting anybody have to worry about what tomorrow's going to bring. Remember, godly courage is the only kind of courage that will have a positive effect on our lives in the coming years, which you will all have to go through. May God be with all of his people when that time comes.